Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 826th episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. Today's podcast is a replay of our monthly garden chat. You can attend live the fourth Tuesday of the month. Go to gardenchat.org to sign up. Welcome, welcome, everybody. Hello, Judith. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Greg. Glad to be back.
I am coming to you from Urban Farm U and the Urban Farm Podcast. If you're on this live, you can ask us questions tonight. If you're not listening live and you're listening to our podcast, you can join us at gardenchat.org, and we do these monthly, and you can ask your questions away here. So Judith Horvath, who we have tonight, has journeyed from white-collar business executive to hair sheep and dairy goat farmer. When COVID and global events laid bare the fragility of our food supply chain, Judith found a way to leave corporate life to concentrate solely on farming. Today, she's helping launch a new generation of small farmers with the goal of establishing a resilient local food supply chain based on regenerative agriculture methods. Rotationally grazed grass-fed meats, and nutrient-dense produce. She's on a mission to help people get started farming and be immediately successful. Tonight, we're talking about how to manage summertime heat stress in animals. We will go over management practices and even some things to put in water to minimize heat stress for animals in the summertime, particularly in the Midwest, of an unusual heat wave. Welcome, Judith. Thanks for being here.
I'm so happy to be back here again. So hello, everybody. I was here a couple months ago, and we talked about bringing animals onto the farmstead and how to minimize their stress for arrival. Tonight, we're going to talk about minimizing heat stress. So stress is a killer for animals, and it is definitely something to manage. And you got to watch those animals. They can't talk to you like your kids, and usually can't bring them into the air conditioner. So we'll be talking about some different kinds of animals and some things that you can do. So a little bit about me real quick. I live in Central Ohio. I'm in zone 6, and I have a 19-acre farm. Half of it is under cultivation. The other half is wild. And I have sheep, like Greg mentioned. I have hair sheep, so they're not big woolly ones. They shed their fur like a buffalo every year. So wow. You don't have to shear them. Yeah, so they're a little different than what people think of when they think of sheep. They're not woolly like other sheep. And then I have dairy goats. And the dairy goats that I have are Nubians. And got a couple of Manchus too. But they are on the larger side, and they also have thinner coats. And as we will talk about fur insulation, it works both ways. So there's some pros and cons to different levels of insulation when it comes to heat. And then I also have lots of heritage chickens, and I also have heritage turkeys. And they're all running around outside doing their own thing. And they usually do fine. Here in Ohio, we don't typically get above mid-80s. And we also are lower humidity. We usually top off at like 70% humidity. Now, I came from New Jersey, where we used to get to 90 degrees and 90% humidity, and that was just too brutal. But here in the Midwest, it's a little bit more temperate, and we're very fortunate in that way. But the opposite side of that coin is that the animals are not accustomed to big heat. So it's less about the heat that you have, and it's more about the sudden change to the animal that is the stressor, that is the source of bodily discomfort.
I just heard something recently that a heat storm, when the first heat shows up, mm-hmm. human bodies are less resilient than if they've gone through it a few times. So I would suspect the same might be the case with animals. Once they get used to it, they're more resilient to it.
Yes. Warm-blooded animals, for the most part, are all equally susceptible to that exact phenomena. You're right. And the same thing with cold, like a very sudden cold snap, things like that. Now, what's different about sheep and goats is that they're prone to, they can get polio. not polio like the stuff that we all used to get shots for 5 decades ago or whatever. Poliomyelitis is a thiamine deficiency that causes neurological symptoms.
Oh, wow.
And right. And that happens because ruminants, those are the animals that swallow their food, then they burp it up and chew their cud, right? So cows, goats, sheep, llamas, alpacas, yak, I think, are cud chewers, and water buffalo. They're all cud chewers, but ungulates, for the most part, they are very susceptible to heat stress problems because if you're not feeling good, you don't want to eat. And if you don't eat, then the rumen doesn't make vitamin B, which is thiamine. And so they can actually end up with neurological symptoms if they aren't eating properly or drinking proper. They got to keep that little furnace going. They got to keep eating. They can't just stop eating for a couple of days. They always have to be munching on something because that's the way their bodies work. So it's really important to keep them cruising along and still eating. Chickens, they can go without food for a few days. I mean, they're not comfortable, but they're not going to die on you or come down with polio. So let's talk real quick about, we got treating and prevention. So let's talk about treating it. And with treating it is spotting it first. So when it comes to chickens and turkeys, when your animal is in distress, when she's panting and she's got her mouth open and she is holding her arms away from her body, like when you're wet in the rain, she's airing out her armpits because they don't have any feather in their armpits and there's a lot of blood flow there and it is a way for them to cool down. So they'll pant and then they'll have their arms, their wings held away from their body. We've seen those chickens with the little fake arms on there.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I digress. They also, if they're under very severe distress, they will start to get pale. They will start to get pale wattles, which is the little danglies underneath their chin, and then their combs, which you know what a comb is. And they can become lethargic if they are in very severe distress. If you see that, you got an animal in distress.
And so I had a problem at the urban farm maybe 23, 24 years ago, right after I first got chickens.
Mm-hmm.
I had one container of water,
mm-hmm.
and it got low and it got hot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really hot day, and I went away and I came home to 3 dead hens.
Yeah, chickens, although they will eat each other and all kinds of crazy things, they will not drink warm water.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I recommend is that if you live in a very warm area, one of the things you can do is you can feed them with an overhead waterer that is like a bucket that hangs, and then you can always dump ice in the top because the cool water goes down to the bottom and then they're always drinking something cool, especially if it's an insulated bucket. You can always do that. You can dump ice in the top first thing in the morning, and or actually maybe I would even go out and do it midday because it doesn't actually get to its hottest until 4 o'clock. So I would go out midday and I would dump ice into the top of a water.
What we used to do, so we used the oil pans, maybe 18 inches across and four
mm-hmm.
inches. We used to freeze a plastic water bottle.
Yeah, that'll work nicely.
And
I do
in the
that
morning,
too.
yep. In the morning, it goes in their water. So you get fresh water and they get an ice cube in there that we can then refreeze the next day.
Yes, that's a really good thing to do. And also, you did something really right there, Greg. You gave them something that they can actually splash around in. And chickens will actually, and turkeys too, they will actually step into something and splash around. So one of the other things I tell people is, I know this is going to sound strange, but go to your Ace Hardware store or dollar store or whatever, and for $5 or $8, pick up a teeny little kitty wading pool.
Yep.
And put a couple inches of water in there and let them splash around in there. And they might look at you funny, like, what the heck? But they'll step into it, especially when they're thirsty and they start to get hot. The other thing that I recommend is in your pen, if you have a way of, a lot of people will give chickens a spot to do dust bathing. And that helps control parasites, external parasites. And it's usually sand. It's like a sandy spot, a dust bath or a sandy spot. So one of the things you can do is you can mist down that sandy area and they'll lay around on it. And if it's damp and cool, they'll lay it, not muddy, obviously, because you know they say nothing's madder than a wet hen and they hate water. But if you have some moist sandy spot, they will lay down on it and it helps pull some of that heat out of them and helps them cool off. You can throw ice in the water, like Greg mentioned, you can freeze a water bottle or whatever. But the biggest thing is you need to make sure that the water is not hot and it needs to be clean too. So dump and scrub that water in the middle of the day if you're in a particularly hot spot, because remember, everything microbial grows very fast in hot weather. And so you can have the animals can become sick very quickly from their water becoming fouled very quickly in hot weather.
One of the other things that we actually did in Phoenix, because 115 degree temps, is we actually bought a evaporative cooler.
Mm-hmm.
In low humidity works great. And mm-hmm. we were using the evaporative cooler for the chickens, and that helped a lot.
Yeah, one of the things that I have just seen, you can pick them up on Amazon or Temu or whatever, is little misting fans. And all you need is that little fan and that bucket of water that it'll sit on, and yep. you can blow it right on your chickens. Yeah. Now you don't want their bedding to get wet, because then that's really stinky. So do that in an outdoor area, right? And make sure that it's shaded, right? But that will really help them a lot. The other thing you can do is you can take a watermelon, put it in your fridge, and then you crack that watermelon open and you hand them a cold, wet watermelon in the middle of the day. Yep. And they go bananas for it. They go crazy. It's got lots of natural electrolytes in it. It's very thirst quenching. It's something for them to do. They peck on it. They scrape at it. They're eating it. It's got a little bit of sugar in it to give them a boost. They're enjoying it. It's cold. It's very stimulating to them because of the red color. And so they're really going to go after it. And you just throw it down and break it open and stomp on it once and it bursts open. And then it's all little velociraptors all running in and hitting that cold watermelon. And that will help them to do that around 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's going to be really nice for them. The other thing I recommend is apple cider vinegar in the water. It also acts like electrolytes.
Really?
Yeah. It's almost, you ever heard of the old fashioned drink Switchel that the Amish make?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, there's a drink called Switchel, and it's made with, I'm going to say it's got vinegar and apple cider vinegar and maple syrup and ginger, I think, maybe a squeeze of lemon. Switchel, Switchel.
Looking up right
and
now.
It's a strange looking concoction, but I assure you it quenches thirst like nobody's business. And there is vinegar in there, and vinegar not only stimulates thirst, but it also really keeps things rolling. And it also is a great antimicrobial. So if you have chickens that are getting a little bit stressed, what's going to happen is you will see that their eggs start getting laid very thin, paper thin, or you normally you've got whole eggs and now you're getting broken eggs. What's going on?
Oh,
in
that's good
heat,
to know.
Right? In heat, chickens start to fail in their calcium absorption from their food. And the apple cider vinegar, the acidity in it, helps them properly absorb the calcium. And as we know, calcium is one of the key things that you must have in perfect balance in your bloodstream. Your body will do anything to maintain blood calcium levels within a very small margin. And so when your animals start panting and they're really in stress, that blood calcium level goes down, even to the expense of being able to lay an egg. And if you have an animal that's laying, you have a hen that's laying rubber eggs or whatever, she can get egg bound. You can have other problems. So it's a really simple solution. Put about a cap full of apple cider vinegar in per quart of water. So if you've got 2 gallons, put in like a quarter cup of apple cider vinegar or a big old glug, you're good to go. So you can do apple cider vinegar in the water or electrolytes, but that's expensive and you got to mix it up and it can be a pain in the butt. So apple cider vinegar is better.
When you can make your own apple cider vinegar.
Sure can. Sure can. If you got your apple peels and all that, and you got the mother and you got a friend like Greg living in the neighborhood, you're all set. So yeah, baby pool to splash around in, misted things, cold watermelon, ACV. Yep, all good.
Cool.
Okay. Yep.
What about the four-leggeds?
The four-leggeds, that gets a little trickier. So I have a llama. I have a guardian llama. And people say, shave your llama in the summertime because then it'll help her stay nice and cool in the heat. And yes, that's true. However, there have been a lot of studies done. And those people who shave their woolly animals, those furry animals, you shave them down to like naked, you give them a buzz cut. If you give them like less than an inch of fur, they actually start to suffer more in the heat. Like I said, insulation goes both ways. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting you should say that, because we have a dog, Kismet, and she sheds mercilessly this time of year, trying to shed off her extra. And Heidi and I looked into getting her shaved, and we found the same thing.
Yeah.
It's more stressful on her if she doesn't have any fur.
Yes. So the magic amount of fur to leave on an animal that is accustomed to having fur is 1 to 3 inches. That's the magic amount. So I shave my llama down to about 2 inches, and then I leave the rest of her fur on, and I keep it, and she has fur on top of her. I leave it on a little bit longer on top to protect her from sun. And then I leave the long hair on her legs to protect her from fly bites and things like that. Cause that's the other thing. If you shave your animals down, they can be susceptible to horse flies and other insects, which is not a huge problem in itself, except that it's maddening to the animal. And when it wants to just lay down and pant in the shade, but it's being driven to walk around in discomfort, now it's walking and it's agitated in addition to being overheated. And that's when you get extra stress. So
don't
just shave your animals down naked. Okay. So goats and sheep, when they're really hot, you'll see they actually sweat like a horse. They'll sweat. And they'll be panting with their mouths open, not just panting or breathing fast through their nose, but like panting with their mouths wide open. And they may become lethargic. And then, just like you might imagine, since they're thirsty, if they are lactating moms or they're dairy animals, expect them to make less milk. So you will have a dip in milk production. And that's natural. That the body's, it's busy sweating and cooling. It can't be making that milk too. And then the milk, again, calcium. It's pulling calcium out of the blood in order to make the milk, and the body does not have that to spare. And so the internal mechanisms of the animal is, oh, I'm not going to make as much milk. So give them a break. If you have dairy cows, dairy goats, whatever, give them a break. And if you're used to getting a gallon of milk a day, then maybe you're going to get 3/4 of a gallon or 2/3 of a gallon, or maybe even 1/2 a gallon if it's like a really long, hot stretch and it's for a couple of weeks. But here's the thing. A lot of people will say, oh, the animal needs a little extra grain or a little extra food or a little extra something because their milk production went down. And I'm actually going to say, don't do that. If you can cut back on their grain, I would recommend that. Now, my sheep don't eat any grain. They just eat grass. So that's a non-issue. But a lot of people will graze their animals who are not dairy animals. They're just grazing sheep, or they're just pet goats. I would say, if you don't have to feed your animals grain, especially in hot weather, don't. Just make sure they always have good hay, because grain puts such a strain on the body and it really kicks up their internal furnace so much that they can start to suffer more from heat, because come evening, they're not actually cooling down because they're busy digesting those concentrated calories.
And here's the other thing. If you're feeding your animals grain, it's not organic. It's got an herbicide on it.
That's glyphosate, right.
Most likely.
Or Grazon, even worse.
Exactly. So you really should. And when we had chickens, and when we have chickens in the future, we always give them organic feed.
Yeah.
So that will have it be less stressful for them as well if you're feeding them organically.
That's true. So in addition to making sure that they have kind of a break, right? And you're expecting less of them. That's fine. So what a lot of people will do is they will do what's called kid sharing or calf sharing, where a dairy animal is milked twice a day, unless they have a baby on them. And so what people will do is they will separate the mom and baby during the night, and then they'll milk the mother first thing in the morning, and then the baby gets mom's milk for the rest of the day. And it's a transitory arrangement where the farmer only has to milk once a day. You don't have full, like, sudden weaning. It's less stress on the mom. It's less stress on the baby. It's just better all the way around. If you are doing kid sharing or calf sharing and you have a hot snap, I recommend that you maybe milk them just enough to keep the routine. Let the baby have that milk because mom is producing less and baby needs it more, because not only is mom producing less, but baby needs more because of the calcium in the milk and the extra liquid, because babies are typically not drinking water very well when they're that young. So they don't have that thirsty urge. When they get thirsty, they're more like they're hungry and they nurse. They're not like thirsty and do water. So depending on the age of your weanling, give them a break. And like the last week, I was one of my goats. I was doing a 50-50 share with one of her kids. I just went and just squeezed each side 3 or 4 times. Nothing looks over full. Put her back in with her baby. And so I pretty much wrote that one goat off. And she's come out of it now and they'll be fine. And I did, I reduced all their grain by 25% and made sure they had good hay and they're all good. The really important thing is make sure that they have a lot of salts available to them, because the number one thing that a four-legged needs to maintain their body temperature at a healthy place, meaning not overheated, not underheated, obviously in the summertime, under temp is not the problem. Overheating is salt. An animal cannot use the water it needs if it doesn't have enough salt. And animals can't just put a little extra, because they sweat out salt just like us. We're always thirsty, right? Yeah. So they make sure that they have salt available to them fresh and not a block to lick on, but an actual loose salt and mineral mix. It's like sand type format, because they're not going to be gnawing on it with their teeth. They don't have to work at it. They don't have to expend saliva to ingest it. It's going to be, they just lick it and then they just slurp it down.
And they know how to do that.
They surely do. The other thing I would recommend is that you change the water more often, just like with chickens. But if they're going to be eating more salt, they don't wipe their mouths after they've eaten salt. And so you'll see all that salt particulate down in the bottom. It looks like sand in the bottom. Then everyone's drinking salty water, which can give everyone diarrhea. And then you got a different problem. So make sure you dump out the water, or you have two different troughs and you dump out the water and you rinse it out. And again, you want to give them nice, not cold, but cool water. They won't drink warm water either. And goats under no circumstances will drink dirty water. They would die of thirst before they would drink dirty water. So make sure the water is scrubbed out really well, because even if it's like slightly nasty, the water, the heat causes the microbes to grow and it starts to smell foul sooner. So clean water, constantly scrubbed and dumped and scrubbed and changed out every day, is really important.
How did you learn all this?
Osmosis, being around horses and animals and reading and experiencing and observing. A science nerd. So my whole life is one big ongoing experiment, I think. I don't know.
As it should
biology,
be.
Basic bio. I don't know. It's biology undergrad. Yeah.
Should be.
Yeah. So with goats, you want to give them shade. Now I do something which the goats are very unhappy with me about.
Uh-oh.
I lock them out of the barn during the day.
Oh.
I force them to stay outside because I don't want them inside where the air is not moving. And there's a little bit of ammonia, you know, from the bedding and everything. I want them outside. I'm going to make them sleep on the hillside, on the grass, under the trees where they have shade and they have water and they're a little bit bored. So they can just plop down outside and they can get some breeze even if they're going to be sleeping. But I lock the animals out of the barn because I know that the barn air is not as fresh and it's not moving as well as it is outside. So I lock them out. I barricade them out. They've got water and minerals outside and that's fine. So that's completely okay to do. Think about that.
Can we do that with children too?
Oh my gosh, Gen X, we all grew up that way. Get out, go outside, right. Don't come back in till the streetlights come on, right? Yeah, I remember like eating a whole ton of raspberries that I picked on the side of the road, right, for lunch. Yeah. Again, you want bare ground and sandy area. If there's any outdoor areas that are shelters for sheep or goats, if there's any straw that you normally keep down, strip it out and just make sure you've got sand down on the ground. That's going to be cooler for them. In the summertime, just strip it down. Yeah, strip it out. And you don't need to be spending money on that anyway. They only really need straw for wetness absorption and insulation, which is cold weather.
In the summertime.
Yep. You can also use a misting fan on your goats and sheep. And I have an outdoor fan, which is mounted to the side of one of my gateposts, and it's blowing directly at my llama.
Oh.
And so, yep, I got an outdoor fan and it's installed and it's, you can get them. They're on Amazon for about 110 bucks and they'll blow air 35 feet away. Yeah, it can be done. And you can also hose down your animals. They'll hate you. They'll be very upset, but they'll be more comfortable. I mentioned the loose salt and minerals, reducing grain, fresh, cool water. Yeah, those are all my things for my sheep and goats. If you do get an animal that's down and it is pale and it's anemic looking and it has pale, pull the bottom eyelid down and look at that. And if that animal is pale, that animal is anemic, call your vet and get care to that animal right away.
They need a Myers cocktail.
They need a Myers cocktail. Yeah, they need it. They need to come inside and lay on your basement floor with a beer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I would call your vet and tell them you got heat distress. And the final thing is, if you do have four-leggeds, make sure you're keeping up on your parasite management, because this is the time of year when parasites absolutely go crazy and they will suck the blood out of your animals. And it puts an extra stress on the animal's body. And sometimes the parasite load can overwhelm your animals. And it's an ongoing challenge for people with animals. So do your checks, make sure your animals are healthy, do your yearly fecal samples and pull down those eyelids and make sure that everyone's nice and meaty, red like a steak.
So, and that's, this is internal parasites as well as external parasites?
Both. Yeah. You can get parasites on the outside of an animal. That can, fleas, mites, things like that can just overrun an animal. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah. Lice and mites. Yes. They can really run an animal down, particularly if they're already stressed from something else. So they might be very young. They might be old. They might be low on the totem pole from the social hierarchy and getting, you know, chased away from the water or separated from a friend or whatever the case may be. And they can just be more susceptible to that. And make sure that you have a really good anti-parasite regimen. You know what you're doing when it comes to animals.
We had to deal with mites on our chickens in Phoenix.
Oh, so easy. Ivermectin.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So easy and not even toxic to humans.
Yeah.
That's right.
Excellent. Yeah.
But ivermectin is useless for internal parasites in four-leggeds.
Oh,
no matter
okay.
what the internet tells you, don't do that. Don't do that. There's other stuff that you can use if you have internal parasites for your four-leggeds.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Any final thoughts?
I'm just going to say, stay cool and continue to spend a little bit of time outside every single day watching your animals. That's the biggest thing. Learn their routines. And then if something is outside of the norm, that is your number one best way to detect when your animal is stressed, because animals are creatures of habit. They will do the same thing every day. They will behave the same way. You will have the same order of them coming in for food or leaving the coop in a certain order or doing a certain thing. And when you see a divergence from the normal routine, that's when you know something is up. So even if that animal's not sick yet, if something is different, act on it. And if you don't spend time with them when they're not stressed, you won't know what's abnormal when they are. So spend time with your animals and watch them. That is going to be your biggest hint to the animal's general health and welfare.
Cool. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yes, my pleasure.
Do us a favor and tell us a little bit about your podcast and where people can find you.
Yeah, thanks. I have a podcast called Fairhill Farmstead Life, where I talk to regenerative farmers and we talk about all things regenerative agriculture and adjacent entrepreneurs. And it's all about earth-friendly, nature-friendly ways to grow food and do things that are food-related. So that's my podcast. And my website is www.fairhillfarm.com. That's FairhillFarm.com. All one word, .com. And If you have a four-legged animal, or if someone you know has a four-legged animal and you are battling internal parasites, you can go to my farm store and for $0, you can, air quotes, purchase something called the medicine chest and the kitchen sink anti-parasite regimen, which is specifically, it's a lengthy program for how to manage parasites in a least chemical way possible. But I'm a big believer that the parasites we've got now, we have evolved them beyond natural treatment, in my opinion. So if you got to use it, you got to use it. But my plan will show you how to keep from having to use it. So if you know someone who's struggling, go there, check it out, purchase it, and enjoy it. There's a flow chart for when to use what, how much, the dosage, the logic behind it, how to mow your pasture, how to move the animals around, you name it, it's all in there.
Wow. So, yeah. Like with plants, the healthier the plant and the animal is, the less susceptible they're going to be to bugs, pests, pesticides.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's like us. It's like us too. The more robust our internal health is, the better we're able to withstand other toxins, other stressful situations. If we get the flu, we're not dying from it. Yeah, it's like that. But yeah, so that's what I do, regenerative farmer. And that's my website. That's my podcast. And thank you, Greg, for inviting me tonight.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I enjoy working with you.
Yes.
Have a good one. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Good night, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent Van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.